B-F-F-T. From the PAC West Center in downtown Portland, presented by High Caliber Millwrights, here's John Canzano with the bald-faced truth.
Interesting conversation between my wife and my father-in-law. They observed today some people running on the side of the road. You know these people. They wake up early, they put on their gear, they put on their shoes, they go outside, and they run for fun. Maybe you're one of them. And father-in-law, who is Taiwanese, kind of wondering, when did that start? When did that become a thing for people to just go out and go jogging and run for fun? Because it couldn't have been a thing maybe like in the late 1800s, early 1900s. You wouldn't have seen that. And we all know kind of the, you know, the explosion of jogging and the role that Nike and magazines like Runner's World played in that in the 1970s and 1980s. Became a fad, became a thing. But when did people start running for fun? Became the question. I did some research on it because that's me. I went down that rabbit hole, so you don't have to. And maybe some of you know the answer to this. Steven, do you know why people just kind of started recreationally running, or like who the first person was who says, you know what, I'm going to go outside for no reason and just I'm going to run out in the open?
I don't know for sure, but I would guess like it has to do with the natural endorphins that it busts out of you.
Because I always thought like Neanderthal would today like visit, like if there was a real Brendan Fraser moment where some Neanderthal was found frozen, then this Neanderthal would be like, why are you guys running? What are you running from? Who are all these people who are just out kind of jogging and doing this thing recreationally? Yeah, the endorphins and the exercise, it's, you know, that's obviously part of it. But when did running for exercise become fun, and when did it become like less weird that you were out on the side of the road? And there's a story out of Greenville, South Carolina from the 1960s. Strom Thurmond, the senator from South Carolina, was one time pulled over by a police officer. He was jogging on the side of the road, and they said, suspicious activity, guy running down the street. Police were called. Strom Thurmond's going for a jog. He gets kind of pulled over and accosted by police because, you know, it wasn't unusual for like somebody training, like an athlete, a boxer training, running on the side of the road. But people recreationally running, I started looking at media reports to find out, like, when did this become a thing? New York Times ran a story in 1968 on a bunch of people who ran in their free time. It was like this trend piece that the New York Times did. It said, you know, basically, you know, who are all these people who are out running? 1968, the Chicago Tribune followed suit and profiled this brave breed of joggers who started to appear in America on the side of the road. The truly ambitious ones were running up to a mile or two as they were jogging on the side of the road, according to the Chicago Tribune. The fashion world caught up with it. Obviously, you're going to eventually see Phil Knight and Nike come on the scene and Runner's World magazine, and it becomes this whole fashion thing. But in that 1968 New York Times article, it kind of told the story of this guy from Connecticut who was, just like the senator in South Carolina, stopped by police for illegally running on the side of a two-lane highway as a pedestrian. You're not supposed to be out there running on the side of the highway. Don't know if you know that. But the police basically came upon this guy and said, you know, why are you running? Which is not a question we'd ask today. So even more research, it appears as though the jogging trend in America came from New Zealand. And we have to thank and give credit to the legendary running coach at the University of Oregon, Bill Bowerman, who was in New Zealand. Came back from New Zealand where he observed all these people recreationally jogging on sidewalks and roads and getting exercise. And it was unheard of in the United States at that time. And Bowerman comes back after this trip to New Zealand in early 1960s and writes this piece that is about physical fitness and physical fitness for all ages. And then, of course, everybody knows the prowess of, you know, Bowerman and the Oregon Track Program. He, as the running community is probably nodding their head going, "You, of course you should know this." He brings jogging really in the mid-1960s back to the United States and makes this pitch saying, you know, people, this is great. This is great for cardiovascular health. This is great for your waistline. This is great for your mental health. And then, you know, Bowerman does all these studies. He starts testing older runners on the University of Oregon track there at Hayward Field. And he showed and proved with the backing of medical experts that jogging was good for you. Now, this became a thing because people said, you know what, this isn't a crime. These people running around on the side of the roads. And it becomes popular, of course, when you start getting stars in the 1970s like Steve Prefontaine and Bowerman and Phil Knight get together in Nike. And so in 1977, the Complete Book of Running is published among a bunch of other publications that come out, Runner's World magazine, and, you know, running becomes a thing. And so, you know, a little bit of education off the top of the show. And I have to say this, whenever I'm out driving and I encounter one of these weird people, and I mean that with all respect and love, who are out running, I always say the same thing. I don't care what you look like. I don't care if you've got a great gait and you look like you're born to do this, or you're just fighting your body and you're barely moving down the road and you look like Charlie Brown, elbows going side to side. I don't care what you look like. I say the same thing every time I see one of you. I say, good for you. I say it out loud. Good for that guy. Good for her. Good for him. Look at them. Good for them. I say that every time because good for you. You're out there running. We got a great show for you today. You've now learned something on today's show. I want to make you smarter. I want to make you healthier. I want you to live longer. I want you to be better looking. All of those things. This show does a lot for you. We got a great show with a good guest today. Jaden Robinson will be with us at the Thursday. It's a Jamba Thursday. He'll be with us in the 4 o'clock hour. We're going to put Coach Prime and Jim Harbaugh up against each other to determine which of these guys is sounding crazier. You're going to be the judge and jury on that one. You're going to hear a little bit about baseball's biggest superstar. How high and how bright can the star of Shohei Ohtani shine? We're going to talk about that on today's show. We'll give our picks for the weekend games. We got a lot ahead. Steven, when's the last time you went jogging?
Oh, man.
That answers the question,
yeah,
right there.
I think that knows. I mean, I would say I would say probably once or twice the last 12 months.
I like to get on the bike. I had the knee surgery not that long ago, but that's an excuse. But I said today, like when you know, they were kind of having this debate about how did these people start jogging? Why? Who was the first person who said, this is going to be, I'm just going to jog for fun? Apparently it happened in New Zealand or somewhere else that New Zealand got this from. But I was thinking, when was the last time I ran a full sprint, full speed? And Anna could remember the time and place. She was like, I know when. We were on vacation and I raced the two youngest daughters. And it had been a while since I did that full sprint, you know, like really like, you know, let loose and tried to run. Like every once in a while, I think you just got to try to see what you can do. And I'm not, you know, advocating for the pulling of a hammy or a quad or a groin or a calf or a knee injury. I'm not advocating for any of that. I'm just saying every once in a while, you got to get warmed up and just kind of see, you know, what you got left, because you don't want to have that time where you're really having to run. And, you know, it's been a decade since you tried to sprint. Like Steven, like you're running from some guy who's trying to mug you. You know, you don't want to find out then that you can't run anymore.
I will say I have fully sprinted within the last couple of months. I was playing with my kids and I was doing a 40-yard dash. I was letting them start at like the 20 and the 30 and I was catching up to them. So I was.
Could you really let loose, or were you thinking about like, don't hurt myself while I try to stride here?
I was going as fast as I possibly could.
Yeah, there's a moment where you, as an adult, where you go from I'm going as fast as I possibly could to I'm going to go as fast as it feels safe. There is a moment where that happens.
I mean, it didn't feel good. I can tell you that. Like, I wasn't going fast, and I didn't feel good afterwards. Like, my body hurt, but I let it go. I let it go as fast as I can because I had the same thought. I asked Coach Vaughn. I said, I don't know when the last time I fully sprinted, because even when I played basketball, like, I was never in a fully sprint. Like, I was, you know, I jogged back and forth, you know, or run hard, but I wouldn't fully sprint. And so I wanted to kind of just do it, like you said, just to see if I could still do it.
You got to stay after it. You got to see what you got. All right, we're going to play a little game here called Who Sounds Nuttier? Jim Harbaugh and Coach Prime up against each other. I want our listeners to play this game as well. Steven, you can participate. Who should go first, Coach Prime or Jim Harbaugh? Who's the home team here? Who sounds nuttier? Who do you want as the home team?
I think, for me, Harbaugh. Harbaugh's the nuttier of the two.
All right, so he'll be the home team. So road team goes first. Coach Prime, asked by a reporter at a news conference about the weather, you know, obviously you've got Baylor and Colorado playing a football game. Colorado's at home. Coach Prime asked about the possibility of rain. You're going to judge whether he sounds nuttier or Jim Harbaugh in a second sounds nuttier. Here's Coach Prime.
Potential rain in the forecast for Saturday.
We got rain? What forecast you got?
Just changed this morning.
No, let me see. It ain't say rain on mine. Who do you use? Straight up.
I just saw it from a local meteorologist this morning.
There you go.
A meteorologist?
That's a mistake. I got 5169. This joke has been accurate. Anybody else got? Read yours.
Either way, let's just say there is rain on the
forecast. No, we're not going to say there is rain. I'm one of those good weather men. When you say 60%, I say 40%. 40% chance that it
rains. Meteorologist that I respect highly said that there's a pretty good chance it rains on Saturday.
Ron says 30%.
Okay. I don't know which one I got. I mean, I need to check mine. Rain does not...
I was just going to ask if you do wet ball drills or anything different to prepare for
this. Yeah, with rain, 30% is 30, 70% it won't.
Coach Prime, Exhibit A. I will withhold my commentary until after. But does he sound nuttier or does Jim Harbaugh sound nuttier? Here's the home team and Harbaugh.
3:34 in the morning, woke up, staring straight at the ceiling and said to myself, it's not just another day, it's today. And maybe that's just another way of saying attack this day with an enthusiasm unknown to mankind. But yeah, it was a great day, and our team got bigger, you know, got stronger, and great to see the guys out in the uniforms and playing.
There's Jim Harbaugh, Chargers coach. I will say I think Harbaugh sounds nuttier. He's just breathy about it. And he's waking up at dark 30 and saying it's not just another day, it's today. And there's a coachism in there. And our guys got stronger today. I'm thinking Jack Nicholson in The Shining when I'm hearing Harbaugh there channeling.
I'm with you on this one. I think Harbaugh is a little nuttier. I think Dion, while... I think he just doesn't know what weather app is the most accurate. Like, that's the problem. I don't know if he knows what weather app is the most accurate. I have a problem with him just getting mad at the reporter for saying he uses the local meteorologist. Like, yeah. Dion was offended by that for some reason. I don't know.
There you go. That's why.
Yeah, I don't understand right? that. So that was nutty. But I think Harbaugh is just, he has a screw loose, but he lives in his own world. And I just don't know, like, is he fully with us all the time? I don't think he is. But it makes him so he is a great football coach. Like, he is just insane in the fact that all he thinks about is football, and that's all, you know, he knows exactly what time he woke up and thought about the football team. That's what he's doing.
A lot of people take themselves too seriously. And so what I like about both these clips is, like, there's a bit of, you know, I think Coach Prime is trying to joke around in his own way. I do think the meteorologist is more accurate than the app, though, and I think my local TV meteorologist friends would agree with that, you know, the apps kind of give
why
general.
Would they be more, you think
because they
accurate?
Know they know the weather patterns and they know the weather system and they know the area, and the app is just using models in a computer to kind of project the generalities of it. And, you know, why we all use the app, it gives us a general idea of what the weather is going to be like. You know, Matt Zaffino or Rod Hill are going to be able to give us kind of that nuance of the area and the weather pattern that the app won't give us. Rhonda Shelby, great example as well. I trust the meteorologist more. Not now. The careful thing is you got to be careful. It's not just a weather person, weather anchor. You want an actual meteorologist, right? And so some of the stations will save a few bucks by not having a meteorologist do the weather. They'll have, you know, weather anchor, and you can usually tell.
They just have me out there reading, reading the internet.
Yeah, if you were easy on the eyes, they would put that's you on true. The camera.
I got a face for radio.
You know, I'm just saying, like the, you know, that's the weather anchor is usually code for, like, you know, let's put somebody who's like not qualified to do the weather,
like a good-looking person
doing the weather.
You
I'm just saying,
a good-looking person.
I'm not saying it, and it's usually not a male. Okay, so that's the other thing. So you wouldn't qualify for it. But here's the thing. Like, even as I look like online at the weather in Boulder, this game's going to kick off at 5 o'clock on Saturday, and the forecast is rain likely, potential for heavy rainfall. So what are we talking about here? So I downgrade Coach Prime a little bit on that answer. Because, like, that's a legit question. And the reporter, by the way, good for him for standing his ground. The reporter's just trying to ask, like, it's a very low-hanging fruit question. And another example of Coach Prime making it very difficult when he doesn't have to make it difficult. But I think we're getting to know him a little bit. I think in this case he's trying to be funny. And trying to kind of rib the guy about, you know, hey, when you say 60% chance of rain, I say 40% chance of sunshine. I'm a glass half full guy.
Are you like Dion where you take the, like if you said 60-40, it's a 40% no, so you're just going to say, yeah, it's not going to rain. Or it's a 60% no, so I just assume it's not raining.
I am an eternal optimist, and it probably drives people around me crazy. Here, I have two things. One, I always prepare to play. If, you know, and that was instilled in me as a young kid. Again, I grew up in a baseball family. You don't wake up and look at the weather and go 60% chance of rain and you start thinking about a rain out. You can't, because psychologically you can't then adjust to playing. Oh, we're playing a game. And all of a sudden you're surprised by it. You have to plan to play. So I always err on the side of game on, game on, game on, good weather. But I get what the reporter's asking the question, because in football, you don't get a rain out. You just have to deal with the weather. And so he's kind of asking, it's kind of a dumb question anyway, because what's he going to say? Coach Prime's going to be, no, we don't practice at all for wet weather. You know, we don't do this at all. Like, you know, it does affect Colorado, I think, more than Baylor if it's wet, because Colorado's entire offensive game plan is centered around throwing the football. So that's interesting to me. But, you know, the way they dry the ball off, the way that everybody wears gloves or, you know, sticky substance on your hand, I don't think it's going to be a huge factor, especially if it's not like, you know, pouring rain from kickoff. Like if it's just rain certain later on Saturday, this game may start when it's dry and finish when it's wet. Who knows? But I am internally optimistic, probably to a fault. I have a short memory when it comes to things that, you know, either go wrong or don't go my way. I kind of roll that way. And so, you know, as a teammate, I'm the one who's always sitting there like Coach Prime going, hey, 40% chance of sunshine. Or if it is raining, liquid sunshine. Like, you know, and it probably drives some other people crazy who are more like, you know, I'm not Eeyore on Winnie the Pooh. You know, I'm just not that guy. But I think Coach Harbaugh sounds, you know, he sounds like he belongs in Venice Beach or in downtown Santa Cruz. Like, you know what I mean? Like, hey, I woke up. It's not just any day.
3:34 in the morning, woke up, staring straight at the ceiling, and said to myself, it's not just another day, it's today. And maybe that's just another way of saying, attack this day with an enthusiasm unknown to mankind. But it was a great day. And
I love that.
He's a wacko, man. He is a wacko.
One of my second job in newspapers was at the Santa Cruz Sentinel. It was in downtown Santa Cruz. I ran into that guy every day in downtown Santa Cruz. He was holding a sign and walking around unshaven, where, you know, smelling like patchouli oil. All right, we got a great show for you today. We got Punch It Audio coming up. We're going to give our picks for the week. Jaden Robinson, Oregon State defensive back, will be with us. We'll talk about what Oregon needs to get right during its bye week. And what Oregon State can't afford to get wrong. All of that still ahead.
Back to the Bald-Faced Truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
Yesterday on the show, we talked about the WNBA team coming to Portland in 2026. Steven and others had suggested the roses. I've heard rose buds. I have heard drops, as in raindrops. What do you think of drops?
I don't like it.
It's negative. It's down. Dropping is down. It's negative. I don't like that. Dropping. No. Nah. I keep them coming. People keep emailing me and tweeting at me with their suggestions for Portland's WNBA team. Should they have a contest to name this team, or should they just name it? I kind of think they should just name it.
Yeah, I think they should just name it, because when you get into a contest, it gets into voting, and then people are going to say the rigging the votes, and there's just problems.
But they do that often. Like, a lot of people will just drum up interest. It's not really a real contest. Like, you know, submit your suggestions and then we'll vote on the top five. And then, you know, they don't really pick the one that everybody votes on. They pick the one they wanted anyway.
But that's why if they're going to do a contest, give me a real contest.
I don't think they trust the public.
I work on the Bald-Faced Truth, John. I don't like liars. Yeah.
And you know how this show got named? Do you know the story?
No.
It was a listener. We did contest. He said, name the show. What should you call it? Yeah, and some of the suggestions were things like Writer's Block and the John Canzano Show. And some guy called in and said, you know, you're bald. How about the Bald-Faced Truth? It was 18 years ago, 19 years ago. And we went, that's not bad. And then went out and trademarked it, and then had to fight off a bunch of other people who tried to steal it. And, you say it enough times, long enough, it makes sense. It's like clever. It's like, it's a play on words, right? So I think it works. So
I don't know if I can get behind drops, though.
Yeah, the drop. And look, you should crowdsource this stuff. And, you know, we had talked about, I'll give you a good story in a minute. We had talked about, the school that was the new school that is going to be named, and they were picking a mascot for it. It's over in the Milwaukee, Oregon City area, and it ended up with the acronym for the school ended up being not good, and it was something that nobody had said out loud, and so that in the end, they ended up going, we can't name the school that, and they had to change the name of the school. I'll tell you more on that story coming up, but first, can we talk about Shohei Ohtani? Little bit of history as he stole his 50th base of the season. Here's Ohtani stealing third base.
There they go. Throw to third. Beats him, but he got his foot in. The 50th for Ohtani.
50th stolen base for Ohtani. Is baseball doing enough to showcase Shohei? Or are we watching, you know, a star at the height of his game with a team that has the brand in the playoffs to elevate his star status? Are we getting everything with Shohei Ohtani that we didn't get with Mike Trout? Or, you know, in much the same way, I wonder with the NBA sort of took the era of Magic Johnson and Larry Bird. And I was talking about this with a friend of mine yesterday, Magic Johnson, Larry Bird. You see what the NBA did with the TV deal and star players and, Shohei Ohtani, is baseball getting enough out of him, Steven? Are they getting enough out of him, or should baseball be doing more, or maybe in this postseason do more to elevate and profile the greatest player of this generation?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think they are doing a lot with Shohei Ohtani. Like, he is definitely the face of baseball. And I think as long as the Dodgers are winning in the playoffs, or, you know, win a couple of games, like, they will, showcase him even more, and they should, because he is such a unique player. The fact that he's probably going to be the first ever 50-50 guy with home runs and steals in Major League history is insane. And then you throw on the fact that he's also, you know, a top 15 pitcher when healthy as well. Like, we've never seen anything like this. So I honestly think they could do more. Like, they could showcase him even more, even though he already is the face of the game. But, like, this is a guy that we've never seen and we may never see again. Like, this type of talent in Major League Baseball. But I think most of it's going to have to do with, can they win? Because when he was on the Angels, like, yeah, we all knew about him. He's winning MVPs, but they weren't making the playoffs. Now the Dodgers are going to be in the playoffs. They're going to be, you know, competing for World Series. They got to showcase him even more. They got to capitalize on this opportunity that they have.
And I think it's now. It's now. It's not like, hey, in the next three seasons. It's not like next season, you know, it's spring training. They got to come out with a campaign. It's now. It's this postseason, this player. Here comes baseball. We've heard all about baseball's ratings increasing and baseball being, you know, more popular and catching the NBA with its television ratings and its exposure, and attendance is up.
And it's more watchable with the game with the pitch clock.
Has it been the pitch clock? Because I remember that was the big discussion. Like, would that has the pitch clock sped the game up to the point where it doesn't matter now that there's a bunch of strikeouts, or does baseball still have work to do?
I think it's fine right now. I think the pitch clock has done its job and it's sped the game up, because, you know, there's times where, I mean, back in the day, you know, just even 5 years ago in the playoffs, these games would be 3.5-4 hours, then we're pushing over 4 hours because the relief pitchers, you know, they're taking their time for every single pitch. You can't do that anymore. It's, you got to get in there, you got to throw the ball, and there's just more action, even though there are a lot of strikeouts still in Major League Baseball. Like, these guys are throwing really hard and they're throwing it quick, so there's just more action to watch. I think they are, I think it's as watchable as it's been in a long time.
And as we look at the postseason in Major League Baseball, and we kind of project what's going to happen here, I am left thinking, you know, hey, we're going to get the Brewers and the Yankees and the Guardians and the American League, and they're in as it stands there now. And then you kind of look over at the National League and you see some others. But isn't it a shame that the Mariners are not being talked about right now as, hey, man, they've clinched a spot, they're in the playoffs. They're in this thing. Isn't it shameful that the way that it unraveled in Seattle? Because it was so nice for the Pacific Northwest to kind of feel like the Mariners were back in, you know, the last couple of years and relevant and around the playoffs.
Yeah, and you have six teams that make the playoffs now and on each side. So, you know, they've expanded the playoffs, and the Mariners made it a couple of years ago. And think about the excitement then, you know, Cal Raleigh hitting the home run to clinch the playoff berth. Like that was exciting, and it was the first time for it to happen in so long. And the Mariners have the pitching staff. That's the thing, is, you know, pitching is usually the tough part. Like, you don't have the pitching staff to make the playoffs. The Mariners do, and not only make the playoffs, but make a run in the playoffs. Their bats are just terrible. And then, you know, last night they lose a game in an incredible way. It's just
stupid.
It just seems like the Mariners are, you know, we joke about like the Blazers being a cursed franchise and stuff. I think the Mariners are just as cursed as the Blazers. Like, they have a lot of young talent and it hasn't worked out very well right now to get them to the playoffs. Like, they just get in their own way and make their own mistakes.
And I'm, you know, the Mariners right now, I think about, you know, most of these teams have, you know, 9, 10, 11 games left in the regular season. The Mariners are at this position where they needed to win 8 out of 10. You know, they needed to win 7 out of 10. They needed to, you know, make a little bit of a run, and they go 5-5 in their last 10, and they have two really bad back-to-back games that feature these base running errors that, you know, cost them dearly. And in the meantime, you're watching a team like, you know, Detroit, which should have been you, come on, and, you know, you got obviously questions about, you know, what happened with, was it a roster thing? Was it a manager thing in Seattle? But the truth is, it's just a team that had the pitching that could have been dangerous and still could be dangerous if it could find a way into the postseason. So it's just kind of sad to kind of watch that unfold and watch that, you know, sort of become the thing. We're going to talk about our picks for the weekend's games coming up. I want to leave a nice chunky segment, okay, Steven? So we're going to break early here. We're going to come back, and Steven and I are going to give our picks for the weekend games coming up, college football games. In the 4 o'clock hour, it'll be Jaden Robinson, Oregon State defensive back. We'll talk some NFL as well. You got the BFT. Leave it here.
To the Bald-Faced Truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
Shohei Ohtani trying to become a 50-50 guy. Just hit home run number 49 for the season. He's got 50 stolen bases, 49 home runs. He's getting there. Earlier this week, we had the great Carl Klick on the show, TV news anchor and reporter for 30 years in the Portland metropolitan area. He's now retired, living in Bend, listening to this show in Central Oregon. Shout out in Central Oregon to the Ticket. We had him on the show, and he talked about his new hobby, which is kind of tracking gamblers and prognosticators who will go on the air and declare that this is this week's five-star pick. Here's who you should have. Here's who I like in the game. And as he pointed out, one of those people on ESPN has a win percentage of 39% on the season. The experts are often not the experts. Take it with a grain of salt is what I'm saying. But that said, my 2024 record against the spread is 24-12. I'm hitting 67% of the games that I am picking against the spread. I'm on fire. I need to be above 500. Again this week, I need to get over 500. That is my goal. My record straight up this season is pretty good. I'm 34-2. I am hitting 94% of the winners just picking the game straight up. I am not like the armadillo in the zoo who goes to pick the game and just wanders around trying to randomly pick a game. I tend to pick the right winner in the game. 36 games, I've hit 34 winners in that span. That said, the games are getting harder. We're into conference play in a lot of cases and tougher games. Also, the sports book and gamblers have learned the teams a little bit. And so the spreads are not often glaringly wrong at this point of the season. But we're going to start with a Friday game. We're not going to do them all. Stanford's at Syracuse on ESPN at 4:30 on Friday. If you want all these picks, you can just see them in black and white at johnconzano.com. I put them out this morning. But if you want to double check and go back, it's a great guide. Gives you the wins, gives you the games, gives you the network, gives you the times, gives you the spread, gives you my pick and some thoughts on each game. But I'm just going to kind of skim through these. Stanford's at Syracuse. Weird game. Stanford left, I'm told, at 1 o'clock yesterday, heading to New York for this football game. This is the first weird. Stanford goes on the road. Cal goes on the road. Bears are going to Tallahassee. Stanford's going to Syracuse. Weird times. But Stanford, I'm having a hard time with Stanford, Stephen, because I don't know who they are. They've only played two games. And I'm not quite sure who they are after watching two games. I especially paid attention to the game they played against TCU, which was a loss. But Syracuse is an 8.5-point favorite. I don't love Syracuse either, but I think Stanford can play within the 8.5 points. And I got this one like a Syracuse by a touchdown. I don't feel great about this game, because I like to know who's playing, and I'm not sure who Stanford is because I don't have a big sample size, and I only trust one game they play to tell me who they are.
I think we're going to learn a lot about Stanford after this game. Like, you're right. This is the data point that we need, that we would love to have before this game, but we're going to get it this week. I'm opposite of you. I think Syracuse wins this game. I think the fact that it's a Friday night standalone game, Fran Brown, the new head coach there, has brought a lot of enthusiasm to that program. Yep. Cal McCord's been really good, the Ohio State transfer quarterback. I think Syracuse is going to win this game by 10, but I think you're right. Like, we just don't know. Stanford may be pretty decent, but we just don't know. We don't have the data points yet.
Does it give you any pause that Stanford had a week off? Because I kind of wonder, Stanford has a really good freshman quarterback, and I kind of wonder if this is the week that, you know, Troy Taylor goes, I'm handing the keys to the freshman.
That would be interesting for sure. And it could be because, you know what, Troy Taylor, I have a lot of trust in him. And that's why I don't like this pick of Syracuse, because I love Troy Taylor. But if they go with the freshman quarterback, I feel even better with the Syracuse team. I just feel like on the road in your first start, give me Syracuse.
All right. San Jose State, also on Friday night, going to Washington State. We had Jake Dickert on the show yesterday. He, said some things about, you know, America and coaches not liking Washington State.
We're one of four teams with two Power Four wins. in the country. The other three are ranked, and we're not. You know, so that says enough about what it means. But at the end of the day, you can only focus on what you can control, and that's this Friday night. But, you know, eventually, if you keep stacking up 1-0s, those things will matter. And I don't think the coaches want us in that pole and want us to see us climbing, if I'm being honest. So we're going to focus on what we need to do. And if we do enough, 1-0 will create an opportunity for ourselves. But our whole focus is on San Jose.
Whole focus on San Jose, but not really, because he's also talking about the polls, which I don't blame him for. But keep in mind, Washington State not eligible for an automatic playoff berth because the Pac-12 is not in an 8-member or greater conference. They're the Pac-2 right now. So if they're going to make the playoff, they have to get an at-large berth. So it is a beauty contest here for Washington State. So I think that matters all season long. As long as Washington State is undefeated, I think Washington State's going to be posing and posturing, and they are trying to get the attention of the committee, which I think they will get if they continue to win. But this is a golden opportunity for Washington State. It's also a potential letdown. But here's what I looked at. Washington State's opened as an 11-point favorite. It's now up to 12. The body of work at San Jose State, they're 3-0. A lot of people holding it up going, San Jose State can stay in this game. San Jose State's not bad. And I think Washington State has to take that very seriously. But San Jose State's wins came over Kennesaw State, Air Force, and Sacramento State. Those three opponents are a combined 2-7. I don't think San Jose State has played anybody. And I think they're getting a Washington State team that's pretty good playing at home in a tough place to play. I think Washington State wins. And because of this beauty pageant that's going on, I think they cover the 12.
I'm with you on this one. Because my thought initially was San Jose State can stay in the game. They got a pretty good receiver, Nick Nash, good quarterback, who actually played at Washington State. But I think that Washington game, John, showed me a lot about Washington State and their toughness. And so I think while this is a huge letdown spot, I think that toughness and the mental toughness that they have, and Jake Dickert coming on the show and saying just what he said about this team, how they trust each other, how they think they're really good. Like, I believe that when he said it. So I'm with you. I think Washington State wins this game on the standalone on the CW network. I think they get a win by 2 touchdowns.
Moving on. USC is at Michigan. This is Saturday at 12:30 on CBS. There, I've been doing two things, I think, with more enthusiasm than anybody else I know. I have been selling Michigan stock all summer and all year, and I've been buying USC stock. Steven, I think you're high on USC as well. But I've been doing those two things. Like, I've been trading Michigan stock for USC stock all offseason and into the first 2 weeks of the season. These programs are moving in different directions right now. Don't at me if you're a Michigan fan. And don't at me if you hate USC. I'm watching these two programs, and I was really surprised when this line was set that the Trojans were only a 6-point favorite. Michigan's brand is outplaying the product on the field. Brand. And so what I'm saying is the book here is wrong with this line. This line should be 8 or 10 points, and it's only 6. So I'm jumping all over this. I think USC is going to cover. They're a 6-point favorite. I think they go to Michigan in this Big Ten game that, you know, we all went, oh, USC is going to be a Big Ten team. Well, they go to Michigan, and I think they win by double digits.
The crazy part is, in the preseason, this game was Michigan minus like 10, and it suggested all the way to this, USC laying the 10 points, as it should, like you said. And it's only six. It should be more, too. That's the thing. I mean, it's changed like 16 points in a couple weeks, but it should, because the way Michigan's played. Michigan's putting in a new quarterback, Alex Orji. That's the one thing that you worry about. Maybe he brings some juice and some life to that Michigan team, but I'm with you, man. There's no way I'm picking Michigan in any situation with the way that they've played. Even in their games against, you know, Fresno State and Arkansas State, they haven't looked good. So I think USC, with that defense, man, is going to be another test. It'll be a different type of defense offense they go up against, but I'm high on USC. I think before the season they were going to be really good, so I think they're going to win this game pretty easily.
And I don't think it's going to be quite like Texas. Texas just, I saw that one coming a mile away. I think it was 2 weeks ago when Texas just laid it on Michigan. It's not going to be that ugly, but it's going to be close to that. USC, I have it like 10, 14 points. USC wins that game. I think it's a pretty comfortable win for USC. Let's move on to Utah-Oklahoma State, 1 o'clock on Fox. Cam Rising, is he playing or not? If Cam Rising plays, Utah will cover the 2.5. If Cam Rising doesn't, Utah could lose this game. Oklahoma State at home is very good, formidable opponent. They're a contender in the Big 12. They've got a tough 2 weeks. I think they're well coached. But if Cam Rising is healthy and Kyle Whittingham is coaching the Utes, I don't bet against Cam Rising and Kyle Whittingham. And so I'll take Utah, and I will give the 2.5 points.
I don't bet against them either, John, but I don't think Cam Rising is playing. I just don't trust Utah and whatever they're going to say. So I'm going to go with Oklahoma State and the home team here. I think Oklahoma State also has heard a lot about Utah coming into the Big 12 and being the favorite. When Oklahoma State had double-digit wins last season, they should have felt like they should have been, you know, the top dog coming in. So I don't know that Rising plays, and because of that, I can't pick Utah. I'm going to go Oklahoma State.
Cal's at Florida State. 3-0 Cal, 0-3 Florida State. 4 o'clock Saturday, ESPN 2. Florida State in a tailspin. Cal flying high. Justin Wilcox defense is the key to this one for me. Florida State, by the way, at 0-3 is a 2.5-point home favorite. I think this game should be a pick'em because I have looked at it up and down. Wilcox's defense, they've given up 10 points, 14 points, and 13 points in 3 games. And they gave 7 away pretty much with a turnover against San Diego State. The defense has just been great. And granted, they haven't played a great offense, but Florida State's not a great offense. Can't run the ball. I think Cal wins this game. I think it's a 21-20. It's not a comfortable win. It's very tight. But if you're giving me 2.5 and that Cal defense, I'm going to take it. I'm going to settle in. I'm going to watch that game.
DJ Uiagalelei, we've seen him. He's just not a great quarterback. And I think going against that Cal defense, you're right. Like, I'm not expecting him to put up a lot of big-time numbers. Maybe he doesn't even finish the game. Maybe they put Brock Glenn in. I don't know. But Florida State is on the Michigan level, even worse, where it's, I can't pick this team. I can't bet on this team to win any game right now. So I'm with you. I think Cal goes in and gets the win, stays undefeated. I mean, are they a sneaky pick to make the ACC title game in year 1?
No, they're not. But they're going to make October 5th interesting.
That conference isn't very good, yeah, John.
I know. I keep looking. I was looking like who Miami's good. I think Miami's good. But yeah, Miami goes to Berkeley on October 5th, and I'm kind of thinking Cal's got a chance to set up an undefeated showdown against Miami on October 5th, but I have a hard time. Look, I lived in Tallahassee. It's a tough place for teams to go and play. It's a tough place to get to. It's a tough environment. It's a good home field advantage. Florida State is generally good. There's something wrong with Florida State this year, and part of it is they can't run the ball. But you're giving me Justin Wilcox's defense. You're giving me a pretty inept run game for Florida State, and a quarterback is not a playmaker. I just think Cal can score enough in this game to win it. And if Cal had not already gone on the road to Auburn and won, that was a one-score game, I would probably be more inclined to say Florida State in a close game. But I'm looking at the spread. I'm going 2.5. I go, this game's got like 21-20, 23-20, 20-17. It's got those numbers written all over it. And so I like a low-scoring game, and I like Cal when you're giving me those points.
I agree with you. And the transfer portal thing always is in the back of my mind. At any point, I feel like any team, if your season goes off the rails, when are these kids going to just start thinking, I'm hitting the portal? And I don't know if that actually is a thing or not, but that is always in the back of my mind. So with Florida State, you're 0-3 already. You thought you were going to be 3-0, going to be 4-0 after this game, and you lose again to Cal. You get down early. I don't know. I can't trust that team right
implodes.
Now.
Yeah, their whole season. We'll get to the Oregon State-Purdue game probably an hour or two, but I want to finish maybe with this one. Baylor's at Colorado, 5 o'clock Saturday on Fox. This was the hardest game on the board for me. I flip-flopped on this pick all week long. You've got Baylor, who I watched very closely in the Utah game. They lost to Utah. They got totally outplayed in the first half. Cam Rising goes out. Baylor knew just what to do defensively once Rising was out of the game. Came back and made that game close. This is going to be a really interesting chess match. Baylor's coaching staff against Colorado's passing attack. I think it's a very close game. Colorado's at home. Because they're at home, I'm taking Colorado. I think it's like 31-27 Colorado. Colorado's a point-and-a-half favorite, but I just think Colorado's going to have just enough offense to win this game and move to 3-1.
I'm with you, man. Coach Primer, give him to me. I worry about Dave Aranda because he is a good defensive coach, but something's wrong with that Baylor team. They struggled against Air Force in that first half, and Air Force is a really bad team this season. I think Colorado, they played well against Colorado State. They played well in the second half of the Nebraska game. Maybe they figured some things out. The season hasn't imploded on them yet. So, yeah, I'm with you. Colorado, I think, gets this win over Baylor.
I think they figured out you don't want to play Nebraska. I mean, I think that was the thing they figured out.
Nebraska might be really good.
Colorado's kind of the Mendoza line for me because I think they're a team that is just good enough to get to a bowl game if they're well coached. And so I keep looking at them going, if they play a good team, they lose. If they play a bad team, they win. Is Baylor a good team or a bad team? I think Baylor is, mediocre. And so I think Colorado and Baylor are just, it's like, they're meeting in a matchup that'll be a staring contest. But I like Colorado.
BFFT. From the PacWest Center in downtown Portland, presented by High Caliber Millwrights. Here's John Canzano with a bald-faced truth.
Shohei Ohtani, 50-50. Two home runs, two stolen bases today. Ohtani makes baseball history. He's the founder. How many guys get to say they're the founder of a club? He is the founder of the 50-50 club. How about them apples? Shohei Ohtani, 50 home runs, 50 stolen bases.
Here's how it sounded, John.
1-2, Ohtani sends one in the air. The other way, back it goes, gone! One-of-a-kind player, one-of-a-kind season. Shohei Ohtani starts the 50-50 club.
Bam. I hope he doesn't pitch in the postseason. I don't want to see that. What a great story it would be. It would be so awesome. I'd hope postseason baseball, different kind of baseball.
What if he's cleared, though?
No.
What if he's cleared and healthy?
No. Dodgers should not interrupt what they have going to just create a sideshow and a distraction and a potential. No, I don't like it. You need that guy, and you have relied on that guy to get where you are now. You don't suddenly change something for the postseason. And he'll say it won't affect him. He's the same player when he's pitching and hitting. I want Mr. 50-50 in the lineup focused on being an offensive player. We're going to talk about Oregon State's game against Purdue, what we learned about the Ducks in the offseason. Steven, can we quickly, before we get into Punch It Audio here, hit on Oregon State-Purdue? That is the game that is coming up on Saturday night on the CW at 5:30, 2-1 Oregon State, 1-1 Purdue. Boilers got embarrassed by Notre Dame last week. Oregon State got beat badly by Oregon in the Civil War. Both teams need this game, is what I'm saying. Oregon State is at home. I am a little alarmed by Purdue's defense. Gave up 362 rushing yards to Notre Dame last week. This is a game where both teams are in the 20s. It's low scoring. Oregon State's a 4.5-point favorite. I like the Beavers 27-21. I think Oregon State wins and covers. You?
I like Purdue with this one. I think Purdue is going to win the game. 27-24 is going to be really close, like you said, but in the game in the 20s, I think both teams kind of got I think both teams got embarrassed last week, I will say. I think Oregon State, the way they played in the second half, was not good. Getting shut out in the second half like that just wasn't great offensively. I think Oregon State is going to struggle to run the football a little bit. Now, I know that that's their bread and butter. They're going to run the football. They're going to be physical. But going up against a Big Ten defense is a little different. I know the Purdue defense isn't great either. But it's just bigger guys, bigger athletes. I think they're going to have struggle a little bit. Javonte McCoy is going to have to make a throw. I don't trust that he can do that yet. I think it's going to be hard fought, but I think Purdue bounces back from their 66-7 loss to Notre Dame. They get it written right. And I also think the fact that Purdue will be heading into the Big Ten play, they're probably not going to get a lot of wins in the Big Ten. So this may be one of their last victories they can really get in the season. I think Ryan Walters knows that and they get that done.
I covered Purdue as a beat reporter, and the comparison I always make to people, like, you know, I'll have people who say, you know, what is Purdue like? And I'll say the fan base and the program, a lot of similarities to Oregon State in how they are perceived in the Big Ten, how the fans feel. You know, Indiana kind of has the glow because of the basketball success with Bobby Knight. Oh, Indiana's like in Bloomington. Look at Indiana. They get all the attention. They get the basketball attention. They have more resources. It reminds me a lot of Oregon and Oregon State, kind of the back and forth with those two schools. It really is an interesting pairing. I just think I don't like where Purdue's program is right now. You give up 66 to a Notre Dame team that got beat by Northern Illinois. I think if there's a chance for somebody to run away with this game, it's going to be Oregon State. But we shall see. Jaden Robinson coming up in about 20 minutes. If you want the rest of my picks, you want to see them all in black and white, you go to johnconzano.com. They're up now. All right, let's play Punch It Audio.
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald-Faced Truth Headquarters.
Hey, we're all about truth, justice, and the American way here, okay? Which is why we've spanned the globe and pulled the top audio cuts of the day.
You're going to hear little snippets of Sam.
Hey, it's time for Punch It Audio.
Presented by First Call Heating and Cooling.
Shohei Ohtani, home run number 49. How did it sound?
Ohtani
sends one in the air. Deep right field. He's in a world of his own.
A world of his own for 49. And then came number 50. Ohtani in a new club.
1-2. Ohtani sends one in the air. The other way. Back it goes. Gone!
One of a kind player. One of a kind season. Shohei Ohtani starts the 50-50 club.
50-50 club. 1-2 pitch the other way. That's when you know a guy's feeling it. Hitting the pitcher's best pitch opposite field. Ohtani in the playoffs, though. Great season. Now it's time with all of the attention, all of the focus on him for him to perform and for baseball to take advantage of that. Teresa Gold, Pac-12 commissioner, talking about adding four teams to the Pac-12.
We're continuing to integrate those new presidents and those athletic directors and have those conversations. But our strategy around adding the four initially was very intentional. And it was intentional to kind of put everybody on notice, like, we're rebuilding and we're here and we're going to be here. And the inbound interest has been absolutely incredible. So there's not enough hours in the day for us to engage with all of the people that are interested in being part of the Pac-12. Our goal is to be really intentional about that process and make sure that we're putting ourselves in the best position to be successful.
Pac-12 presidents, athletic directors met yesterday. I'm told it was more of an informational, hey, this is how we're going to proceed type meeting. I was also told, expect this to happen sooner rather than later. I said yesterday I thought that this would be done. They would fill out the conference before Halloween, before kids are trick-or-treating. People who were involved with that meeting nodded as I told them that and said they expect the same thing, in part because they've got to go to market and they need to go sell their media rights afterwards. Baker Mayfield, looking over at Bryce Young with a little bit of perspective. Bryce Young got benched this week. Baker Mayfield knows how that feels.
Quarterback's hard, especially for young guys, when you're not surrounded with the pieces that, you know, not given the opportunity to have success. And so that's a lot of the time guys have the talent, they might have the brains, but they don't have the right opportunity, the right fit. I'm sitting here right now in a way better fit than the other places I've been. And that's not to put other teams down, but it's a matter of the pieces around you, the coaches, and for Bryce, a guy that, you know, I can relate to this, finding that belief within yourself again, and he'll get it. His story's far, far from finished.
Yeah, you hope so, but, you know, you see so many young players in the NFL get tossed into a situation that, you know, just doesn't work, and they're forced to try to make it work, and Bryce Young, you know, benched, and probably not his fault. Gardner Minshew, he got a pep talk from Max Crosby as the Raiders pulled out a victory over the weekend, and he's finally got asked, you know, what was it that Crosby said to you? Well, here's Gardner Minshew.
No, it was awesome, man. He grabbed me and just said, hey, we got your back, dude. Like, we need that Washington State Gardner. We need that, you know? And I was like, man, you're right, dude. Let me see if I can go whip that up real quick. But, nah, man, that dude's a great leader. He does it the right way, man. And couldn't be more grateful to have him on our team.
Gardner Minshew is a hacker, and I mean that in a good way. He's a gamer. He's a grinder. Max Crosby having his back after an interception. That's a good thing. Julio Rodriguez and the Mariners trying to make a run for the wild card. Rodriguez on third base. A weird play at home plate. As a bat goes flying, Rodriguez is distracted by it, and then suddenly he's out.
Runners lead, 2-2. Swing and a miss. And the ball is thrown to third, and they get J-Rod. Oh, what a happenstance. A Rosarena strikes out. Let's go to the bat. Rodriguez trying to get out of the way. Straight too far off of third. And then the quick throw to Chisholm for the double play.
Wow, this is amazing right here. You watch this great pitch, and there goes the bat, and Rodriguez gets out of the way. But the only problem is the ball's still alive.
Two base running errors in as many games for the Mariners. Can't afford this. It wasn't just Rodriguez trying to get out of the way. I don't know if you saw this, Steven, but it was almost like he forgot the situation once the bat was in the air, and he just kind of lackadaisically tried to get back to third base. He was so far off third base that, you know, the bat flying distracted him. He almost treated it like it was a foul ball.
Yeah, it's almost, he just kind of went brain dead for a second there. You're right. He moseyed off of third base to avoid the bat, and then he just kind of kept walking. And third base coach, you could see him yelling at Julio to get back on the bag because it's a live ball. And, you know, heads up play by Austin Wells and the Yankees to throw him out at third. And it just kind of summarizes the Mariners season. Like, they're right there. They just can't get over the hump, and something weird is going to happen to them. But yeah, I mean, that's a play. You know, Julio's got to be better than that. You're making $200 million on your contract. Like, you can't be making those type of base running mistakes.
You heard me and Steven pick the USC-Michigan game. Joel Klatt, what does he think?
One team has an identity, and I don't think the other team does right now. And that's strange to say, you know, when we're sitting here, because there was no team with a stronger identity and a more secure identity over the last 3 years than Michigan. And right now they're searching. They're replacing their quarterback, and so they're going to go from Davis Warren to Alex Orji. I still think that they're searching for the right combination on the defensive side about aggressiveness versus base defense or not blitzing. Meanwhile, you look over and USC knows exactly who they are. All of a sudden, they've got a defensive structure that they very much believe in. They feel like they're physical. They tackle better in space. The offense, at least I thought, was going to be fine, even without Caleb Williams, and that's proven out to be true, in particular with Miller Moss and what he's been able to do. And think of it this way. They haven't even really scratched the surface as far as running the football effectively or getting the ball to Zachariah Branch, who's probably their best offensive player.
Look, USC, it's not just identity. USC has the better offense in this game, has the better defense in this game. The only wild card is this game is being played at Michigan. So,
how shocking is that, though, that you said it without hesitation? They have the better defense. USC has a better defense than Michigan right now.
They do. Michigan, I thought, was very lucky to get out of that Fresno State game winning 30-10. That was a one-score game that everybody forgot about because there was a pick six that went the other way. And it was about to be a Fresno State touchdown that was going to make it a six-point game, and all of a sudden it was a blowout. You know, that game was a tell. And then Texas blew them off the field. I mean, they're just not very good.
USC's schedule is tough, John. They can probably get in the playoff with two losses with some of these games they have coming up. Is this a playoff team we're looking at in USC?
Well, we got to see it, but they looked like it against LSU. Zach Lowe talking about the NBA. Biggest question in the NBA, he says, It's Damian Lillard and the Milwaukee Bucks.
Continuity won't be enough. And to me, this is the single biggest question in the NBA going into the season. Can the Bucks rediscover the form of a team you look at and say, that's a contender? That team can beat Boston four times in a playoff series. That team can beat the beefed up Knicks four times in a playoff series. The Sixers with Paul George. All those teams either stayed the same or got better. Milwaukee is coming off the year from hell.
Year from hell. A lot of discord and lack of continuity. Congruency, whatever you want to call it, evident that Milwaukee needs to get it together. I just didn't think they had very much fun. And if you really want to look at sort of the byproduct or the commonality, the glue, so to speak, of a lot of teams that win big, they all look like they're having fun, you know, and they're enjoying themselves. And, you know, we saw that with UConn in basketball a couple of seasons in a row. You saw it, you know, in watching the NCAA women's tournament. You saw it. You'll see it in the World Series. You'll see it in the Super Bowl. Nobody having more fun than the Chiefs out on the field, how creative and fun they are. And Mahomes is smiling on the sideline. But I didn't see a lot of joy in Milwaukee. And if that continues, Stephen, let me ask you this. How long does Damian Lillard stay quiet and happy?
I'll give him the end of this season. I'll give him this year because Doc Rivers, you know, being the head coach now for a full off season, they kind of put a lot of blame on that he came in mid-season. They weren't ready. Dame said even last year he wasn't in shape. So I'll give him this year. If the Bucks flame out in the first round again, could I see Damian Lillard asking for a trade out somewhere? I could. I could see him asking to try to get to Miami like he always wanted to.
Finally, yesterday, big announcement. As the Portland WNBA team was unveiled, the team owner, governor, what do you want to call the Portland team ownership group led by the Bothell family? Here is a comment by the new ownership group.
As we prepare to launch this team, it is obvious. It is obvious that Portland is the global epicenter of women's sports. For years, Portland has been the global capital of sports lifestyle, and today is the day we claim it as the global epicenter of women's sports. From the historic success of the Portland Thorns to the growing momentum around women's basketball, it happens here. There is no better place for this team to thrive. Portland is at the forefront of a movement that is shaping the future of women's sports, and we are proud to be a part of that history.
That's Lisa Bothell Mirage, who is the team governor. The Bothell family also owns Thorns, so I get what she's doing there. Epicenter. It is the greatest success story in the country when it comes to women's professional sports, is it not? The Portland Thorns, so talk about their attendance and the success they've had on the field and, you know, the idea that Alex Morgan came in and sort of helped launch that thing. And here come the Thorns. And now look at them go. And now look at the ownership group that bought the Thorns. They now have the WNBA team, $125 million franchise fee. It's all kind of exciting watching what's unfolding here in Portland.
The positive thing, too, John, is the ownership group's not from here. They're from, I believe, the Bay Area.
And Sacramento, I think.
Yeah, Sacramento,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And they want to be in Portland. That's the thing, is they have the, you know, they have the franchise with the Thorns, and then they went out and said, yeah, we want the franchise in Portland for the WNBA. Like, Portland gets ragged on a lot, and sometimes it's deservedly so, but this kind of shines a light on a positive thing of, like, hey, we want to be in Portland, and we want to, you know, kind of build this up again.
Coming up next, Jaden Robinson, Oregon State defensive back. He'll be with us as he is every Thursday, courtesy of Jumba. Leave it here.
You've got the home of the truth. Back to the Bald-Faced Truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
Every Thursday, Jaden Robinson, team captain, defensive back, Oregon State, joins us, courtesy of Jamba. Life is better. Blended. Jaden Robinson joining us now. How's your day going, man?
Great, man. You know what I'm saying? Just got out of practice. I'm at home chilling right now, watching some film. What you got going on?
Well, I'm doing this show, and we've got curriculum night tonight at my kids' elementary school, which means I have to go and sit in their little chair in their desk in their classroom and understand what their day is like as a elementary kid. What do you remember from elementary school? Because you grew up in the Seattle area. Is there a teacher you remember or a school you remember, or do you remember curriculum night? Did they even have it back then?
I don't even remember what I don't even know what that is. Yeah, I have no clue.
That's where I meet their teachers and find out where their school is. Yeah, that's what I like. That's the end of that. What do you remember though from elementary school?
Recess mostly. I mean, yes. Honestly, learn how to subtract, multiply, divide, stuff like that. I mean, I don't really remember a lot.
What'd you recess, play at recess? What'd you play at recess?
Basketball.
Okay.
Basketball. The jungle gym, or like the little spider, the big
yes.
metal, whatever thing that is.
Yeah. Big, that like half dome thing that you can climb on.
Yeah.
Is that what you're talking about? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we had one of those. We had tetherball too. I was not good at it but I always played basketball or football. And we would play tackle football, Jaden, until like the yard duty lady was watching.
What does that mean?
Well, we couldn't, like, we were not allowed to play tackle football. We were supposed to be two-hand touch. But if Shirley had these big mirrored sunglasses, she was the yard duty, and if she wasn't looking, it was tackle. And then when she would turn around, it went back to two-hand touch. We were complicated that way. In playing football. Did you guys play football on the playground or just basketball?
Yeah, no. I mean, we played basketball, but when I was at home with my friends, we were playing like Flyers Runners, Flyers Up in the backyard, stuff like that. So,
I like it. At practice this week, how's the energy been?
It's been good, you know, for a week. You know, we're about to get back under our feet and get ready to go again. You know, I think energy's been nice at practice. So, the guys are ready to go, you know.
Tell me what that Oregon game felt like for you on defense.
For me, it felt good. You know, it felt like I was ready to get off the field at certain times, and I couldn't, you know.
Yeah.
But other than that, you know, it felt good being back out there. My last Civil War really didn't go out the way I really wanted to, but, you know, it felt good to be out there with the guys. You know, it was a lot of their first Oregon State rivalry games, so, you know. That was new for them, but as far as me, you know, I was ready. I was having fun.
When a game goes like that, are you just itching to get back out there? Like, give me the next game as fast as it can come, or do you need some time to kind of sit back and digest what happened?
I need like a day to sit back, the day of, or like that next following day to digest it. But after that, I'm ready to play. I'm ready to get back on the field. I'm ready to get all that back out.
There are some people who follow the Big Ten who are saying they just think Purdue is going to come into Research Stadium and win. There are others who have seen you guys at that home stadium where you're very tough who say, you know, I don't think Purdue understands what the home field advantage is in Corvallis. How do you kind of approach this game? You watch Purdue's film. You know, they've been good and bad at different times. How do you scout a team like that?
You know, you respect all fear none type deal. You know, you do you respect them by prepping for them, watching a lot of film, and then, you know, you go out there and you play. You know, they're just another faceless opponent to us, especially to me.
I am eager to see, you know, offensively how you guys will respond to Purdue. But, you know, what do they look like on film as you kind of see what they do offensively? You'll be on the defensive side of the ball, so. You know, what are you expecting on Saturday night?
You know, they're about 50-50. The O-line's pretty big. You know, I think they got a good mobile QB that, you know, can threaten us in certain ways, you know, if we're not on top of our game. But other than that, big O-line, you know, I think skill-wise on the outside, we match up with them. They got a little height on us, but other than that, I think we'll be fine. Stop the run, and we'll be good.
I know when school starts, it's a different rhythm for you. You know, what are you ready for classes to start, or do you kind of like this time of year where you get to focus on football and Jamba Juice and, you know, just mainly being a football player?
I'd much rather just be a football player than go back to school, but I don't mind school. You know, I got some good classes coming up this this term, so, you know, I'm ready to get back on campus, you know, show face, say hi to everybody, meet some new professors. So, you know, I'm always happy about it.
What class, give me a class that you're going to take that you're looking forward to.
Yoga meditation.
I love it.
Yoga meditation. I love yoga, but, like, you know, just a different form of it. You know, I'm always down to try new things at the end of the day. So that's one of those.
I need a yoga class in my life, but, you know, I don't have that luxury. You know, I got three kids running around here, radio show to do, column to write. Like, think of the blessing that you have at this time in your life. And I was telling my daughter this. She goes to Oregon State. I was like, hey, you're a student right now. You don't have the pressures of real life. Like, are you aware of that right now? That, like, you know, you're in this last year. World will change for you in a year. It could change in a great way, but it'll be different.
No, most definitely. Like, last year, especially, like, getting this year back made me think, like, dang, like, I'm really about to go into the real world. You know, I don't really have to worry about, you know, buying a house, getting a job, having to get up and go to work every day besides going to play football, you know, something I love. So, you know, it's real different, you know, and having to think about it is like, dang, like, it could truly be different.
There's a successful season for you guys that's out there, and it starts with a win against Purdue this week. What does getting this week and winning, being 1-0 this week, mean to you?
You know, a good thing going into a bye week, especially off a dub, is always great momentum. You know, coming off a loss on a bye week, you know, you don't really ever want to do it. It doesn't feel too good. But being able to win this game this weekend, you know, and get back on the road, back at home, and do it for us, you know, it's going to be the best thing, you know, I think, moving forward. So
yeah, you hit on something there, because I wouldn't want to sit around for 2 weeks after a loss. Like, because you that's the part of me that would be itching to get back out there. Like, if I have a bad radio show, I want to turn around. I want to do a show as soon as possible to get that in the rearview mirror. And for you, like, at your position, often when you're playing really well, Jaden, like, people won't notice you as much. What I mean by that is, like, if you are doing your job out there, maybe people don't, you know, it's kind of like, you know, they don't see, like, oh, he got beat deep, or he, you know, a guy caught a ball on him and he missed a tackle. Like, when you're doing your job, it kind of flies under the radar a little bit. Coaches know, football people know, but I don't know if the average fan knows it. When a defensive back has a great game, they often, it's very quiet, isn't it?
Yeah, it very much is, especially on the side of the field. You know, they're throwing to one side and not the other. You know, it varies, though. You know, some people, yeah, it's hard, man. It's hard. I probably like it. I like it, but I don't. You know, it's good that they don't throw your way, and then it's good that they do, that they don't. I don't know, man. It's really mixed, you know, unless you're not a football player, football guru, you know.
Do you miss being an offensive player? Because in high school, you played both ways. I don't think you ever came off the field.
I do sometimes, but, you know, I like getting the ball. If I am on offense, I don't really like blocking. You know, that wasn't my real forte in high school. I was a little smaller. So, you know, I just kind of wanted to get the ball and get down or go score, run away from everybody. That was the main goal. But I do miss it a little bit.
What's your video game? What's your go-to?
NCAA. NCAA right now, I'm heavily invested in NCAA.
Heavily invested. What does that mean? Like, you know, are you playing other people in the team, or are you just, this is something you got to do every day? Just tell me what heavily invested means.
I'm definitely playing my teammates on the team. You know, they beat me. Some of them beat me. I beat my teammates. So, you know, we go back and forth. It's always fun. But for the most part, I'm playing my teammates, and I like to play online. So,
yeah, that's good. I think, what does that do for you? Because I suspect it gives you a mental break from football for a moment. It's still a competitive activity. You're focused. You're not out, you know, doing something you shouldn't be doing. Like, it's kind of feels like a healthy thing, a healthy diversion.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. You know, it just helps me keep my mind on the game. You know, like, as I'm playing defense in the game, you know, I'm always reading routes, you know, like, reading leverages, like, adjusting coverages, just stuff like that, you know. And trying to make offense, I just try to check reads, you know, like, I try to be as intentional as I can, you know, while playing the game and still be realistic that this is just a game. So, you know, some stuff isn't going to go how it should in real life. So, you know, that's just how I go about the game.
Help me with this. Were you one of the guys that opted into the video game? You know, did you get that opportunity or how did that work in your circle?
Oh, yeah. We ended up, EA, like, hit our school and they were basically like, if you want to opt in, you can. You don't. You're not forced to. So I ended up opting in. And I'm really excited I did. Like, I didn't know, like, in my time here at Oregon State that they would be revamped in the NCAA and I'd end up having a chance to be in the NCAA. So I'm happy about that. And I got lucky.
Do you play as yourself in the game?
I play with Oregon State occasionally. Like, if I play my friends, yeah, I play with myself. But also online, my friend does have an ultimate team that he has me on, so I do play with him.
Yeah.
And we play together, and I do play as myself.
Isn't that kind of weird to see, like, here's a player who, that's you on the screen, or it's fashioned after you. Did they get you right, or are you fast enough, or does he move like you? You tell me.
I think they got a lot of things right. You know, overall, you know, I think could have went up. You know, speed is there. I like the speed. Yeah, honestly, just the overall. But other than that, it's fun. It's fun playing with me. You know, it's weird at the end of the day because, like, dang, like, I'm really in a game right now. Like, that everybody else in the world is playing right now.
Right.
So.
That's got to be a trip. Yeah. All right. Yeah. Jamba. Did you get a Jamba today? Have you got a Jamba this week?
I got a Jamba for me and my DBs yesterday.
Okay.
For practice before, and then I didn't get Jamba today, I don't think, but I might later, so don't quote me on that.
Still early. All right, Jaden Robinson, I will see you at the stadium. Appreciate you joining us every week. Good luck with the video game.
Yes, sir. I appreciate you for having me. Have a good one.
You too, man. All right, there he is. You know, he's the first person who's ever asked me what I was doing. I like that about that kid. You know, what are you up to? Oh, well, thank you for asking. Thank you very much. You know, I'm going to a curriculum night tonight. I'm going to figure out what curriculum night is between now and when I have to go to curriculum night. And Jaden Robinson, brought to you by Jamba. Life is better blended. Want to thank the folks at Jamba for sponsoring that interview and that segment every Thursday. Steve and the team at Jamba come up big. How about that, Steven? Jaden Robinson asking me what I'm doing later.
Polite young man, I'll tell you what. And it sounded genuine, too. Like, he really kind of wanted to know, like, what's up today? Like, what are you doing right now?
It almost ended up, you know, like Dan Lanning the other day was like, you know, let me ask you a question. I was like, okay, let's do this. It's nice to be asked a question once in a while and not just be the guy asking the questions all the time. You know, I had a friend yesterday, and I said, how you doing, to my friend? And he said, actually, not very good. You know how when you say to somebody, how are you doing? And everybody just kind of expects you to be like, I'm fine. But my friend said, I'm actually not doing well. And let me tell you what's going on. I rather appreciated the fact that he was going to tell me, you know, it wasn't just a platitude.
But then don't you feel obligated to, like, find out what's wrong and, like, want to help and stuff?
Well, that's me.
Well, that's
you know, I'm a problem solver.
It's not so me, so.
You have anything going? You have anything you need help with? Like, what's the biggest? What's the biggest problem in your life right now, or the biggest annoyance in your life right now?
Just getting my kids ready for school, probably.
Okay, in the morning time.
Yeah.
Okay.
The little one just doesn't want to get dressed. He's a big non-dressed guy. Like, he doesn't want to be wearing clothes really ever. And so, like, to get him to put his clothes on before school is just a pain. And he just, you know, crawls around. He's like, I don't want to. I'm like, well, you got to. And then we just, you know.
Well, what is he getting out of that exchange? Because I got to think maybe you're giving him some attention there.
Probably. Yeah.
Yeah. We had a similar situation with our youngest. And how I solved that is I said, you got to get dressed, and I leave. I noticed if I hung around begging her to get dressed and change and get out of your jammies and all that, it just turned into this prolonged situation that wasn't productive. So try to hit and run a little bit.
I also need help with some winners. You know, the betting, you know, I lost a couple last week, so I need some winners, John.
Okay, so this week you got Thursday Night Football coming up.
Yeah.
Patriots-Jets coming up tonight. Patriots are a 6.5-point underdog. playing this game in New York. Aaron Rodgers and the Jets. All these NFL games are one-score games, Stephen. This one feels like another one-score game. And so 6.5? You good with the Pats and 6.5?
I think I do. I think I like the Patriots.
Under?
And the under, too. Yeah, 6.5 and the under. I mean, this screams like a 20-14 type of game. Something like that, 17-14. Rodgers doesn't look right yet.
No, but he, you know, any given day, he's going to throw 5 touchdown passes.
Yeah. Just hopefully not tonight, because I'm on the Patriots.
Not tonight on Thursday night, Mr. Rodgers. Okay, leave it here. You get the BFT.
Back to the Bald-Faced Truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
Well, Shohei Ohtani, the story of the day. As he came in to play tonight, chasing a 50-50, trying to become the first guy in Major League Baseball history to have 50 home runs and 50 stolen bases. He has now turned in one of the greatest days in baseball history. Amid all of that, Shohei Ohtani, well, I'll let you hear how it sounded.
Ohtani.
There's one.
1-2. Ohtani sends one in the air. The other way. Back it goes. Gone! One of a kind player. One of a kind season. Shohei Ohtani starts the 50-50 club.
Started the 50-50 club and then said, why not?
Watching this guy.
Shohei Ohtani, 6-for-6, 3 home runs, 10 RBI. Have mercy, Shohei Ohtani. And a guy who, like, when he hits the third home run, there's no smile. He almost looks sheepish as he's watching the ball go over the fence. Heading into the 51-51 club. Ohtani goes from 49, 50, and 51 on the same day. 16th player in Major League Baseball history to drive in 10 or more runs in a single game. Let's look at his day. 6-for-6, 3 home runs, 2 doubles, a single, 10 RBI, 4 runs scored, 2 stolen bases. There you go.
It's pretty good. It's great how we started the day. Like, we started the show like, oh, will Ohtani get to 50-50 today? And, you know, we're not even 2 hours into the show. It's like, yeah, he's destroyed the 50-50 club already.
You know what he didn't do today? He didn't hit a triple. You know?
Single. He didn't walk either. If you're the Marlins, why are you not just walking this guy?
With the bases loaded, in no doubt.
Never, you know, pitched to him.
First player in Major League Baseball history to get to 50-50, and now 51-51. How high can he go? It's going to spark some hyperbole, of course. But when you look at greatest season in Major League Baseball history, you start to think about Bonds, obviously. You start to think about, you know, you start to think about players that have turned in great years. You know, you look at Babe Ruth in the 1920s. You can pick from a number of different seasons. You look at Bonds in 2001. You look at Rogers Hornsby, who in 1922, drove in 152 runs. Ted Williams comes to mind. Ted Williams batted 406 in 1941. 1946, he might have been even better. In 1946, Williams drove in 123 runs and scored 142. You think about Mickey Mantle a couple of times in the 50s, who had amazing years, but Shohei Ohtani has, inserted himself. If we're calling Bonds 2001, sets a major league record for home runs, sets the major league record for walks, sets the major league record for slugging percentage while playing in a pitcher's park, and drives in 137 runs, you know, what Shohei Ohtani is doing this season, 51-51, is got to be among the best 10 seasons ever in Major League Baseball history. It just has to be. As I look at, you know, Mickey Mantle, Babe Ruth, Honus Wagner, 1908, when you look at Bond's stats, I mean, it just, everything looks crooked, but Honus Wagner in 1908 had a .542 slugging percentage that was first in the league, drove in 109 runs. That was big time in 1908, by the way. And, he was, his slugging percentage was 90 points better than the person that was second. Yeah, that was a dominant performance. But this Shohei Ohtani season, it's going to spark people tonight and tomorrow, Stephen, to say, this is the greatest season in Major League Baseball history. I have a hard time topping Bonds in 2001, but when you include the scandal that came after Bonds and the scandal that came before Ohtani, will any of what happened in the early part of the baseball season and spring training with his interpreter carry over to the discussion, or because baseball so quickly put it behind him, that's the way to handle an investigation, people. Is it a non-factor, doesn't come up at all in association with this year?
No, the interpreter, that is a non-factor because Major League Baseball dealt with that thing. They put all the blame on him, and that's what happened. It was nothing to do with Shohei. It was all the interpreter, and he got every single blame put on him, whether it was him or not. I don't know. Nobody really knows, but that's not going to be the talking point. It's just going to be talking about Shohei Ohtani and his great season. I do wonder, though, John, do you think the interpreter had a little money on a parlay today of, three homers and two steals? What does that pay out?
Interpreter's cleaning up.
No, but you talk about best seasons ever. Bonds had a four-year stretch where his on-base percentage was .559. Yeah. OPS was 1.368, 209 homers. He averaged 52 homers. And that, Bonds' four-year stretch is still better than Shohei's season of just the one season right now.
Let me just to point out how unique he is. There have been 2,780 Major League Baseball players in history. All right, so about 2,100 people or 21,000 people have ever played baseball. Only one has ever hit 50 home runs and stolen 50 bases in the same season. That guy's also a pitcher. he's a unicorn. And you look at what the Dodgers spent on him in the offseason, and I'll admit, I kind of wondered when they signed him to that deal, would they get, less than what they paid for as, over the course of that contract. I am now going, gosh, did they get a bargain? Because this guy is, when you look at individual seasons, and you look at, hitters who have ever had just a dominant individual season. I go back to Ricky Henderson hit 24 home runs and stole 80 bases in 1985. That was a remarkable season. You look at Ken Griffey Jr. in 97, had 56 home runs, won the MVP. Really good season. You could put that up there. You look at, certainly guys that, are in the Hall of Fame already, Ted Williams, 406 and 41. You look at DiMaggio in 1941, he hit safely in 56 games. Even though Williams in that same year hit 406, it was DiMaggio who kind of, stole the thunder and won the MVP award in the American League. And, you look at Jackie Robinson in 1947, he was Rookie of the Year, took the Dodgers to the World Series, stole home plate four times that season. You look at Barry Bonds in 2004. He walked 232 times. 232 times he walked. Astounding. I mean, he was so feared.
The Bonds four-year stretch, 2001 to 2004, he had 755 walks, only 239 strikeouts. The stuff that he was doing was astronomically insane. But the thing about Shohei, John, is 2 years ago, he was fourth in the Cy Young Award, too. This is a guy that's hitting going for 50-50. He's also a top five, top 10 pitcher in all of Major League Baseball when he's healthy.
I don't think he should pitch in the postseason. I know I said it earlier. I'm doubling down now. I believe it even more so now. His value to the Dodgers right now is hitting. And I think if you're the Dodgers, you do not mess with what he is doing.
But what about going forward? Maybe not next season? Do you want him to pitch next
season? Next season, it's fine. He has the offseason to work and get comfortable. And what I fear is, you have a huge investment in this player if you're the Dodgers. And what I would fear is, why put him in a situation that he hasn't been in all year? You've allowed him just to be a hitter. Look at what has happened when the Dodgers have just allowed Shohei Ohtani to focus on being a hitter. Yes, he has value as a pitcher. Of course, you could use him as a spot starter or a reliever or a middle reliever or bring him in to win you a World Series. Of course, you could do that. But I just think the stakes are too high here, and you just don't want to put a pitcher. And I think if you got, you know, Tom Glavine on the show, who we've had on the show, or you got, Nolan Ryan on the show, these guys would tell you that there is a rhythm to their season, that there's the off-season training that they do. They get into spring training, and there's an arm strength and a comfort and a body control that they have that builds throughout the season. I just think there's a big risk here if you throw him back out there after a surgery. You know, this is a guy who's having his UCL fixed, and, he's recovering from a torn UCL ligament. And so I just feel like it's too big of a risk. I wouldn't do it. This would be the same as, you want to protect your investment, and the guy is succeeding for you beyond your wildest dreams as a hitter. Keep him in that situation. Do not mess with this guy and throw him out there as a pitcher. It becomes a distraction. It becomes a potential injury risk. And his body, he just hasn't been throwing that way. And I saw an interview with John Smoltz where Smoltz was talking about sort of the conditioning that you get as a pitcher throughout the season, and what you get out of spring training, and what you get out of the first half of the baseball season, and kind of when, your body as a pitcher is acclimated, and, it's the muscles, it's the ligaments, it's the whole package. As a pitcher, you want to be at your best when you need to be at your best. And there's just no way Shohei Ohtani could be at his best. And I also think it's not just the idea that you would risk injury. It's the idea that you're messing with a guy who is just playing at such a high level as a hitter. I let it lie, and I bring him back next year. Next year, you mess with it. But three home runs, 6 for 6 at the plate, drove in 10, stole 2 bases. This is a guy who's going to end up, 55-55 club, 60-60 club. How far can he go? Shohei Ohtani and the Dodgers. All right, leave it here. The 5 at 5's coming up. We're going to lead you right into Thursday Night Football.
BFFT. From the PacWest Center in downtown Portland, presented by High Caliber Millwrights, here's John Canzano with a bald-faced truth.
Watching this guy.
Oh, my gosh! Shohei Ohtani! The greatest day in baseball history!
Is it the greatest day in baseball history? It's really good. 6 for 6, 3 home runs. With all eyes on Ohtani, he pulled it off. Got me thinking about, the greatest sports achievement that you and I have seen in person. What have you seen in person or watched live that blew you away? I immediately, what came to mind for me was Usain Bolt in the Olympics. I saw him twice. I saw him win the 100 and 200. I saw him set Olympic records and world records. But it wasn't the same as watching Ohtani over the course of a couple hours do what he did today. And I didn't see it in person. Steven, did something come to mind that you saw in person? Because I would say Usain Bolt doubling up in the 100 meters and the 200 meters in Beijing, setting a world record and an Olympic record is pretty cool.
That's got to be really cool. Yeah. I'm racking my brain, John. Like, I don't know that I've ever been to a sporting event where, like, someone, like, broke a record or anything like that. I just remember there's certain guys that I've watched that I've never seen people move like that. Derrick Rose was one of those guys where I watched him play and I go, I've never seen a guy move quite like that before. This was, like, peak Derrick Rose, like 2 or 3 years into the league when he was healthy. Like, those are the things that stand out. But, like, individual performance in the game, like, I would rack my brain. I even texted Coach Vaughn, like, have I seen something like a record? And I cannot, I don't think that I have.
Yeah. I saw Walter Davis for the Cleveland Cavaliers score, I think he scored like 40 one night, 50 one night. I was a kid. It was like the greatest thing I've ever saw in person. NBA player going for 50. I was just a kid. I was a Warriors fan. And the guy checked himself into rehab the next day. That was pretty impressive. That he might, you know, he might have been all hopped up and playing basketball. He went straight to rehab after the game. I'm trying to think, like, you know, just individual performances that were that remarkable. Think about it. There's going to be a lot of talk today about, you know, and tonight and into tomorrow on the Worldwide Leader about, is this the greatest season in baseball history? And I'm sure Barry Bonds is sitting somewhere going, well, wait a minute, man. I you know, all I did is hit a million home runs in a season. Otani, nice start on the home runs. That's what Bonds would say. All right, we're going to give you the 5 at 5. We're going to lead you right in to Jets-Patriots Thursday Night Football. Let's do it.
The 5 at 5. Number 1.
Well, how can I not start with Shohei Otani? He's the talk of the day, John. He was coming in today looking to get into the 50-50 club, which would be the first time ever, 50 homers, 50 steals. He needed 2 homers and a stolen base. Well, he smashed that. He went 6 for 6, 3 home runs, 10 RBIs, 2 stolen bases, 51 homers, 51 steals for the season. Now, only 6 players before Otani, John, had a game with 17 total bases. Shohei Otani, 17 total bases today. He's the first to do it. With a steal as well. He also swept 2 stolen bases on the day. So, you know, on the day he went 50-50, one of the greatest games ever as well for Shohei. Also, Dodgers clinched the playoff berth with the win. So, Shohei Ohtani, all the praise today.
Here's how it started.
There they go. Throw to third. Beats him, but he got his foot in. The 50th for Ohtani.
Ball beat him on that play. It looked like he was going to be out, and just nice little slide and got his foot in there.
Number 2.
Well, Texas might be the best team in college football, John, but are they going to have a quarterback controversy? Arch Manning, remember, he came in last week against UTSA. He went 9 for 12, 223 yards passing, 4 touchdowns. Also had that rushing touchdown where he hit a top speed of over 20 miles per hour. Well, he's going to be starting this week against UL Moreau. Now, Quinn Ewers, who is the starting quarterback, he has an abdominal injury. Coach Sark said he's not concerned about Ewers' long-term future, but Texas, they're going to be cautious with SEC play looming in the coming weeks. Mm. They do play Georgia in a couple of weeks as well. So Arch Manning going to get the start against UL Moreau. First start of his young career. For Arch Manning, is there going to be a QB controversy if Arch can continue playing well?
Well, I think they have the right guy as, you know, in the middle of this controversy, because Arch Manning and his family, they've not been vocal about, you know, he needs to start, he needs to play. They've taken their time. They've pushed NIL deals to the side. I think it's been a little bit refreshing to kind of watch he and his family handle the success and handle the spotlight that comes with being a quarterback at, you know, a top one or top two team in the country. So I don't think there will be a controversy in the way that you might have it in some other places, but it's very interesting to see a young player who's obviously very gifted in a situation where we all know he could succeed. There's a lot of quarterbacks that could be successful in that Texas system with all the talent around him. So I do think, you know, he's going to have success there. And Sark, this is part of coaching. He's got to figure out how to manage that, how to keep everybody happy. But on the bright side, I think the Manning family, you know, to this point, they appear to have their feet on the ground. I mean, just totally reasonable family, I think, at this point.
And it's a good problem to have, right? I mean, just to know you have a guy, just in case your quarterback does go out, you have Arch. But you're right with the Manning family. Like, you know, Arch could have transferred easily after last season. He decided to stay. They had no controversy at all. Like, Arch has kind of done this really well, and I think it is pretty refreshing.
Yeah, and I think it goes back to the parents, the family. It just, you know, the Mannings, they just seem to understand it, know that it will happen, you know, 3 generations now, and, you know, doing quarterbacking the right way.
Number 4.
Well, there's not a QB controversy in Carolina, as Bryce Young has been demoted to backup quarterback. Andy Dalton's going to be the starting quarterback. Bryce Young, 2-16 in his career as starting quarterback. He said today that he was surprised when Panthers coach Dave Canales told him he was going to bench him in favor of Andy Dalton for Sunday's game. Young said, as a competitor, obviously not how you dream of what's going to happen. It wasn't something that I necessarily was expecting. Obviously, it was not something that was great to hear. Now, Young did not admit that he was mad, but there are sources that are close to him that say he initially was upset with the benching. Another source said that was close to Bryce Young said that the quarterback is open to anything as it pertains to staying with the Panthers through the end of his rookie contract or being traded to another team. Panthers have said they plan on keeping Bryce Young and not looking to trade him.
I think this whole system is messed up. And I think, you know, young quarterbacks who get picked often get put into, unforgiving positions. We've watched it for generations. It's not the right thing. It's not the fair thing. It's just the thing that's happened to Bryce Young. I think, too, though, you know, there's some money that goes along with it that it will make it easier for him. It's not the same as people in regular life getting a raw deal, but I look at it and I say, gosh, it was an unfortunate thing. A lot of people could see it coming, and it will unfortunately play itself out over and over again. There are a few quarterbacks that got drafted in this last draft that will be thrown to the wayside after 18 or 20 starts, and people will say, well, they can't play. And the truth is, you know, they might be better off doing what Michael Penix is doing in Atlanta.
Number four.
Lions head coach Dan Campbell, he has to sell his house, John, to get more privacy. He didn't elaborate, but reportedly his home address got leaked to the public, and he was becoming the victim of pranks and harassment after the Lions' losses, including the NFC Championship game against the Niners, which is crazy because the Lions have been so bad for so long. Like, how are you harassing this guy to get when you got to the NFC Championship game? So Campbell and his wife, they did sell the house for $4.5 million. Ashley Crane, who sold the house, said the buyers are huge Lion fans, and the Campbell family has already moved to a new house.
They're moving on up. I get the feeling that he was doing this anyway, and this became the excuse. I don't know.
Number five.
Well, there's more golfers than ever in the world now, and have you ever wondered how many golf balls are lost in a year? Well,
the time. I think about this nonstop.
Well, found golf ball CEO Sean Sheinfeld, he has estimated that there's over 1.5 billion golf balls lost in the United States every year since the year 2020. 1.5 billion. Now,
where are they going?
In water, in water hazards, people are hitting them in the beach.
But everywhere. If there's that many, wouldn't they just start piling up everywhere?
Well, people do go out and they go, like, recover them as well. Like, some people, that's, like, their hobby. Yeah. They go do that. But 1.5 billion, because people estimate on average it's 1 to 3 balls lost per round.
Well,
half
a billion of those are mine. So
that's only in the U.S. Around the world, they've estimated that it could exceed 3 to 5 billion every single year, because there's golf courses everywhere nowadays.
Well, there you go. Make sure you write your name on them so people can give them back.
Because people are doing it in the Loch Ness Monster. Like, they were doing research there. They found tens of thousands of golf balls in the Loch Ness. Like, people just hit them wherever.
The monster's not there. I am a marine biologist. All right, Shohei Ohtani having this great season, this great night. Here's the other thing, though. Aaron Judge could win the Triple Crown. Like, is Aaron Judge having a better year than Ohtani? Just think about it. We don't have enough time to talk about this. We're going right into Thursday Night Football. We're back tomorrow with another great show. Senator Ron Wyden will be joining us on tomorrow's program, among other guests. I hope you grab a podcast of this. Read me at johnconzano.com. I'm off to curriculum night. I'll let you know how that goes tomorrow.